Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Amy. Are you going to tell everybody your story?
You got to
tell it. It's too funny.
No, I guess.
Come on, your voice is so raspy. Why is your voice raspy, Amy?
My throat's a little sore this morning.
You have a cold?
Choked on an olive pit. And it's really not a laughing matter.
Sorry.
But I want to just let our listeners know, if you're choking on an olive pit or something else, and you're in a restaurant, do not go to the bathroom. You want to be out where people can see you. Fortunately, someone went into the bathroom to retrieve me because it was serious. I mean, I couldn't swallow and had to go to the emergency room.
Goodness.
And the folks in Dalton at Hamilton Regional were fabulous.
They have a good emergency room there?
They were all
thumbs
right.
Thumbs up.
Everyone was so pleasant. And thank God I'm alive and able to be here at the Atlanta Business Radio Show today.
You get hero points.
Sore throat or not, I'm happy to be here because we have a great guest today, Lee.
Who do we have?
Well, first of all, how are you?
I don't have the good story. It doesn't matter about me. It's about you.
No, it's all about you.
Not
all about
close.
You. Well, gosh, I don't want to be the one to steal the limelight, but you know what? That's not going to be possible with our guest today. We have Mike Gomez with us. He's the managing partner of Allegro Consulting and Growth Specialty Firm. He's amazing. He's a former USAF pilot and sales and program management executive with aerospace giants like McDonnell Douglas, Boeing, Lockheed. Heard of any of those, Lee?
Yes.
Gosh. And he has impressive sales background, too. A record of over $4 billion. After leaving the corporate world, Mike started a consulting firm for mid-sized businesses, and he's here today to talk a little bit about that and about his upcoming seminar, The 10 Essential Elements of Long-Term Sustained Growth. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Mike.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Lee.
So I understand you're really smart. I get all that. But what do you do for fun?
Fun? I'm a fitness nut.
I can tell by looking.
I've done 3 marathons. No more. That takes too much commitment, too much time.
Yeah.
I bike, swim. I like to play. Skydive, scuba dive, water ski, snow ski, fly airplanes, you know.
Do you still fly?
Still fly, yep. My latest adventure is helicopters.
Oh,
and,
nice.
The last company I was actually helping was they provide parts for the Apache and the Black Hawk helicopter, and I found out that, I've been working on fixed-wing airplanes all my life, the F-16, mm-hmm. the F-15, and those things, and I became, pretty good expert at that and very knowledgeable when I'm talking to, clients and customers and all that stuff. But I started talking to the Army aviation people who fly helicopters, and they were saying things that I have never heard of. And I don't like that feeling of not knowing what they're talking mm-hmm. about. So I immediately went out and decided to go get my helicopter license.
Is it a different personality type that flies helicopters and planes?
Actually, no. These are the same adrenaline junkies that make up the military arsenal of pilots. They love being out there and flying. Flying in any way is just an absolute joy.
So it sounds like you've had a really interesting career path.
Tell
us how you got into consulting.
I talk about a roundabout way of going about doing this. I started as an engineer working for the government, as an aerospace engineer working for the Navy. I helped kept the A-7, which is an old fighter for the Navy, flying, and left the Navy to pursue a lifelong dream of becoming an Air Force pilot. It did that. You talk about a career that you didn't have to pay me for. The idea of giving a young person a key to a supersonic jet and letting him go out and buzz around the skies is, what more can you ask for? So,
was that difficult to go through that? Because not everybody, a lot of people want to be that person, but it's hard to be that person.
It is a very intense training program, a very competitive program, and the answer to your question is absolutely yes. There's a certain skill set that comes with being able to handle all of the demands that require to be a pilot, and the Air Force does a really good job for finding those skill sets out.
I'm sorry, guys.
No, I've got so many questions, Lee. I can't stand it. Go ahead.
Did you take anything from that military background into the business world? Like, do you see any similarities?
It's interesting. Someone asked me that question just the other day, and we don't go out in an airplane without a plan. I mean, we're going to know what we're going to do. We know what time we're going to take off, literally, what time we're going to end up at a certain destination, and to use a real military term, it's called time on target. And you have a certain way you're going to get to that target. And when you get to that target, you're going to do a certain thing, and then you're going to come back at a certain time. And all that is pre-planned. You sit down and you spend hours planning out that mission. And if there's anything that I would I take, you know, into my consulting practice is the idea of planning. Too many times I find that companies are just winging it. They spend more time planning their vacations than they do planning their businesses. And Amy, I went back and Lee, I went back and listened to several of your previous shows, and I was always fascinated with the question you constantly ask your guests at the end of the interview, and that says, where do you see your company 3 years from now or 5 years from now? And amazed by the hemming and hawing that comes with that answer. And these are the business owners, and that's planning. And so, you know, just like we plan a mission in the Air Force before we take off, I encourage my clients to plan how you're going to, where you can take your company. And at what point you want to
how it's going to end? Is that
how it's going to end.
Well, that's what you're doing at the Air Force, right? You're planning how it's going to end.
No, you're planning on how you're going to accomplish the mission.
Right, and that's the end,
that's
right?
The goal? No, the goal is saying, I want my company to be this high and this far and this wide and this tall at that stage in our career, in our life.
And really then probably when you can pull back from your company as well. I mean, so many people start a business and it might be a hobby or they have a great idea, but I love asking that question, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Because some people see themselves very active in their business and other people see themselves pulling away. Is that something you work with when you're consulting with a company?
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting question because both of those require a different kind of strategy. And some people do love to start up companies and then sell them, mm-hmm. and say, okay, you know, that's my passion is creating something and then passing it on to someone who would take it on bigger and better than I. But that requires a certain type of strategy and forethought in how you structure the company, how you build up its worth and value and whatnot. And again, we go back to, you know, one of my biggest pet peeves is teaching companies how to plan, how to lay out a strategic plan, long range, how to look at what you're going to accomplish this year, with very specific measurable milestones, and holding people accountable to those.
So, how do you go from being a pilot to then working for these major companies and working in lots of other countries? Gosh, over 20 countries you said you worked in?
Yeah, it's. I just came back from a chamber function, an Atlanta Metro Chamber of Commerce, a Global Commerce Committee. And
it's like another country there, isn't it?
And it is. It's fascinating to listen to the things that they're doing to try to promote Atlanta to international companies to come here and do business. I've had the fortunate pleasure of working in the international side for these major aerospace giants. And I got there again in a rather rather interesting path. I started leveraging my both flying background, engineering background with McDonnell Douglas to go into flight test, and there I got to work with all of our aircraft, the F-15, the F-A-18, the AV-8B Harrier, and I got recognized for that combination of skill sets, and they thought it would be an ideal setting for going into international sales or in the sales side, because these are very complex aircraft, and they require you not only to be able to talk about the flying characteristics of them, but also the logistics and the engineering characteristics. So that's where I found my calling. I was fairly good at that, and closed my first $2.5 billion deal with the Israeli Air Force at the young age of 34. You talk about an interesting challenge, 7-year campaign.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because it's, I mean, you know, those kind of long sales cycle.
I can't get my mind around that. I really can't.
It's interesting. I tell you, my mentor at the time, I was, you know, young, ambitious, whippersnapper. And my vice president, when the Israelis announced, after 2 years of my effort, that they were not going to make a decision to buy more F-16s, but instead hold a competition, which was accomplishment number one for me. Yay!
So you knew that you had a shot at that point?
I created the shot.
Right.
I created the shot. And my vice president...
Did you plan?
I planned. Oh, that was a goal number one, actually. That was a goal number one in the long-term plan, was to stop them from buying more of the same and get them to think about something else.
At least be open.
Be open to something else. And so they publicly announced that they're going to hold a competition. And my vice president called me in and said, all right, Mike, you know, congratulations. You've done really good. But you're about to enter.
But still no money, right? You're doing all this. You still haven't gotten a dollar.
More important was his advice that says, you're about to start a marathon, and you haven't even approached the starting line.
Wow.
So be patient and think about this in the long term. And I'm like, yeah, right. I'm gonna wrap this thing up in a year. Well, 4 years later, we finally got the deal closed. 80 some odd trips back and forth to Israel. Everything that you could possibly think of that would have happened in the middle of a campaign. You know, we changed administrations from Bush Sr. to Clinton. The government of Israel changed from Yitzhak Shamir to Prime Minister Rabin. We had Desert Storm and Desert Shield happen, so I literally had a war interrupting our campaign. But this is what it's like to manage a massive multi-billion-dollar campaign. I say it's akin to, you know, driving an aircraft carrier. You've got to constantly keep your hand on the wheel if you're going to turn it in any one direction, and you have a lot of people there that are helping you along the way.
Tell us a little bit about the differences in cultures. I mean, that would be fascinating to me, just the difference in cultures and the values you probably saw amongst the people you did business with.
There's one consistent thing that that I saw in all of my international work, and it's a difference between, I think, the way we do business here in America and the way most of the rest of the world does business. You know, we're very, you know, you come in and you give me the right value proposition and the right price tag, and we're going to close the deal tomorrow. By God, you know, we're American businessmen. We're moving forward. Ha ha ha. Internationally, it is relationships. Mm-hmm. And though that word is overused a lot in America, oh, it's all about relationships, it really means a lot. They want to get to know you, and they want to get you to know them, to know their country. I would insist that any executive that I brought into Israel as a result of this campaign, you need to bring your wife, mm-hmm. Or your spouse, and I want you to take time, not just come in and do business and get out, but I want you to take time to see the country, go to Jerusalem, because you're going to be asked the question, are you going to be around here and see our country? And I want them to say yes, because you've taken time and interest in their country and their issues and things like that. So that was one of the interesting aspects about international.
How can you use that, like here in America? Like, how could a person use that bit of information? Should they get that involved? Like, if you're negotiating a deal with somebody, should you, you know, take the time? Like, how intimately should you know that prospect of yours?
Well, I teach a process called customer decision analysis, and it says, you know, understanding who makes the decision and what the priorities of that individual are. And I would definitely recommend and encourage any company who wants to pursue international business that they have to understand that that is a long sales cycle. They're not gonna bite at your apple just because you have a nice, you know, shiny red apple. They're gonna want to know you, and they're gonna want to understand you and you understand them before they're gonna make a deal. So be prepared for that.
That should be your mindset, is to go in with a long term. It's going to take a long time.
It's a long time.
Baby steps.
Baby mm-hmm. steps. Lots of visits, and that costs money. And a lot of small mid sized businesses immediately think, I want to move international. I want to go international. I really caution them that says, you know, let's establish a really good, solid foothold here in America, and establish the underpinnings of your company, and then we'll step into international with our eyes wide open, understanding what it is we're stepping into and how long that sales cycle is going to be.
So, what motivated you to leave Lockheed and start a consulting firm? I mean, that's a big step.
It was actually, you know, you always look back and you go, wow, I was given an opportunity. When Lockheed wanted me to move to Fort Worth, Texas, I decided then that was the last time I was going to move on behalf of a corporation and let them dictate my life. I had come to love Atlanta, and I had established a very, very good network of friends here. My family lives in Alabama, so I was close to them. And I've been traveling around the world for years. I mean, I have a million frequent flyer miles with American and close to a million with Delta. It was time to say no. Thank you very much. I'm not moving to Fort Worth, Texas. I'm going to stick around here in Atlanta. And that's what really was the kick in the pants that I needed to say, all right, let me take the skill sets that I've learned selling airplanes around the world and helping companies like Lockheed and Boeing succeed and helping mid-sized businesses take those same lessons and help mid-sized businesses grow too.
So tell us about your first client.
Fun. Here was a owner who was spending 120 hours a week working at the job. It was an $8 million company, 18 employees. They were underpinnings of a very good idea. But he when I first met with him, he said, I can't keep working like this. There's not enough hours in the day. I have no family life. This can't be what it's like. I know I have the makings of a good idea, but I don't know what to do. I've exceeded everything that my knowledge exists about how to make this company grow and succeed beyond this point.
How did you meet this client?
It was actually passed to me from a friend that used to work for me in Boeing, and they had run into them at some conference or something like that, and said these guys have got a really good idea, but they need help. So, I took them through the processes that I now make a habit of taking most companies through, and that is first, let's figure out what it is that you all do that sets yourself apart from your competitors, mm-hmm. that really stands, keeps you, makes you unique in your industry. And then they were dabbling not only that kind of business, but they were also dabbling in miscellaneous other businesses that was distracting, and we had to stop that behavior. And then, this company was around for 17 years. They never had a strategic plan. Never.
Wow.
Never. And so we created for the first time their first strategic plan. We walked them through the basic steps of the SWOT analysis, the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. I facilitated that process for them and took advantage of their knowledge and of the industry and understood where the opportunities were and what their strengths were to exploit those and where their weaknesses were that needed to be addressed. We created a one-year tactical plan with very specific milestones of things that they needed to accomplish this year toward that long-term objectives. And then we started addressing all the other aspects of the company that will allow us either to succeed or fail in accomplishing those things on that plan. Changing the way the organization was lined up, new job descriptions for key people in the company. I even wrote a new job description for the owner. I called it the new CEO job description to get him out of micromanaging and into acting like a CEO.
And I understand you took them from $8 million to $35 million in revenue and from 18 to 46 employees. In what period of time?
2 years. Two and a half years. You talk about rewarding. This company was up in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and every time I came up to visit, you saw more people, new faces, and the company expanding into the next building over, and then they had a new building built behind them, I've sold billions of dollars of airplanes around the world and got the corporate slap on the back and saying congratulations, now go out and do this. That was probably more personally rewarding than any other job I've ever had. And that's when I knew I found something I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
How did you work with them? Like, did you talk to them on the phone or via email or visit them?
Ironically, Lockheed couldn't figure out a way to make it work out where I could stay here in Atlanta and do the job that I was doing. But this little company could figure out how to work with me. They knew I didn't want to live in Fort Worth, Texas, at Fort Wayne, Indiana. So they set up an office for me here. They said, you're only an hour's flight away. We can talk by internet and email and phone. So, and you can come up here anytime. So, I pretty much operated from Atlanta and with a lot of visits to Fort Wayne, continuing to revise and change how they go about conducting themselves and their businesses. Spent a lot of time on their marketing aspects, the website development, to make sure all these things were in line with the new strategic plan and where they were going.
Right. Were they your only client at the time?
At the time, yes, they were the only client.
So you were able to focus exclusively?
Solely on them.
So they're the big winners, I guess, looking back, aren't they?
Well, it was interesting. They literally threw so much money at me to the point where they hired me full-time. So, you know, I shut down the consulting company and concentrated fully on them. Uh-huh. But that took
you a little bit off point, right? Because you wanted to have a consulting company?
Yeah, but this was a great opportunity to test what it was. That
your methodology?
And what I bring to a company. Uh-huh. And more importantly, it showed me, because interacting with this company, I got to interact with a lot of other similar companies like them. And I found some of the same common problems that existed. The lack of understanding, clear understanding of what it was their core competency was, what was that was unique about the way what the company had to offer, and the lack of any strategic plan or a tactical plan in clear-cut job descriptions, holding people accountable to roles and responsibilities that they had.
It amazes me that people don't have more of a plan. People invest so much in their business, but they don't have a strategic plan. It sounds like you have an upcoming seminar that you can tell us a little bit about.
Does this address the plan?
This actually, guess what number one is on the 10 essential elements to long-term sustained growth?
To go to your seminar.
That's number zero.
That's number zero. Come. But I will reveal the number one is have a plan. Please have a plan. I mean, my God.
So you don't like the ready, fire, aim?
Take a shot, tweak. The winging it approach and all that stuff is maybe good for
radio.
Maybe going or going to the grocery store and deciding what you're going to buy. But
I would say it isn't good there. Either if you want to lose weight.
Yeah, but. My goodness! I ask when I have an opportunity to meet company owners, and one of the first questions I ask is, "Do you have a plan?" And you get that kind of deer in the headlights look.
Should I? Do other people have a plan?
Actually, they do know that they should. They really do. They all of them do, and it's sort of like they that term paper. Yeah, I know I should, but my God, that's a daunting task, and I'm too busy chasing down fires, day-to-day fires, to do that. Or life is too good right now. I don't need a plan. Look at all the business I'm getting. But right. You know, ultimately, you're going to find out that without that plan and without having all of your employees operating on a consistent game plan toward a certain objective, you're going to struggle, and most of them do. The thing the analogy I like to use is like being on a sailboat in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean without a rudder. Okay, the winds are going to blow you somewhere. You may end up in Finland or South Africa. Big difference.
Right.
And who knows how long it's going to take you to get to any one of those destinations and how much money you spent trying to get there. Having a plan is that rudder and says, I'm now going to guide this ship in that direction to that point, and that's the one I want to go to. I'm going to go to Finland.
But how do you, like when a person is putting out fires and is immersed in their business, how do they create these like short and long-term plans? Like how do they do it while they got 50 balls in the air?
You start delegating responsibility to key members of your team. You don't become the father figure and the go-to guy for every single answer that is needed to operate your company. And so many CEOs, owners, giving them the title CEO, they're behaving differently. But so many owners find that they need to be the go-to guy, the father figure. In this example of this company, one of the things we did was we literally moved the owner's office to the other side of the factory, moved his secretary over there. She screened anyone who had to come in. The door was locked. And we had to break him of this habit. So, you know, you don't see the owner or the CEO at the time. We start changing the way he was defined. Unless you first met with the guy who was directly responsible for that particular aspect, whether it was manufacturing or sales or finance. You met with the finance director first or the manufacturing director first. And if he couldn't solve the problem, then you both came to the owner. But handing off the responsibilities of the day-to-day things to key people, giving them that role and responsibility and holding them to accountable to certain standards that you expect them to, allows you the free time to start thinking strategically about your company.
How easy was that to get across to that owner?
Very hard. It was very hard. We had to break a lot of habits. And
how did you get them to buy in? Because because most owners have that, you know, this is, I can only do it. No one else can do it as good as me kind of mentality. How do you break them of that?
There's two things. One, this was an owner who recognized
something had to change.
Mm-hmm. And though he challenged me with very, very good questions and very probing questions for why it was I was making the recommendations that I did, and I welcome that challenge. Once I passed that test, he adopted it, and so you know, the acceptance that change needed to occur, and then starting to make those changes, that's critical.
You know, your passion is evident, and I'm thrilled that you're going to be sharing it with some of our listeners that are fortunate enough to sign up for your event. Can you tell us a little bit more about the event and how people can sign up?
Well, let's see. Yes, it's actually free.
Wait. It's free?
It's free.
It's free?
It is free. And
wait a minute. And you sold billions of dollars of things to international companies and governments, and you've got all this experience, and it's free?
It's free. And this is an hour and a half. From 7:30 to 9 o'clock, the Georgia Tech Global Learning Center has been kind enough to host this event. They're going to offer a nice continental breakfast for our guest. And this is an outstanding time during the summer lull of business for owners to come out and sharpen their saw a little bit, as Stephen Covey would put it, to take a little time to go out there and listen and learn something. And maybe you can take it back to your companies and decide whether or not you want to employ some of these essential elements that I'm going to share with them.
So I imagine there's a limited amount of people that can attend, correct?
It is. We've got seating for 250 people.
Okay.
In their amphitheater. And it's sort of first come, first serve. If you go to my website, allegroconsultant.com, there is a registration now link. And you just put your name, your company name, your title, and you're in.
And you have to RSVP. You have to register, right? You can't just show up.
You have to register, yes. We want to make sure we have enough seats for everybody and we have enough food for everybody, so that's all part of the planning.
So Wednesday, July 16th from 7:30 to 9 a.m. at the Georgia Tech Global Learning Center. What a wonderful facility, too. That'll be great.
I tell you, if anybody hasn't been there, I think it's one of the best-kept secrets in Atlanta. Most people have to do off-sites and business meetings and hotels, and that gets kind of old and dreary every once in a while. But this is a top-notch professional learning and off-site facility, and I think they're anxious and excited to have the opportunity to show people around their facility when they come.
And what's the title again of the seminar?
The 10 Essential Elements of Long-Term Sustained Growth.
And we already know number one.
We know number one.
He's teased us and definitely
there's nine other ones.
Enticed us with his knowledge, and his passion is so evident. I really encourage all of our listeners to come. Lee, I'm going to have to go on right now and get
my
spot. I'm going to have to register
now. If there's any room.
Well, now you've got me scared.
Maybe you can, you know, maybe Mike can hook you up.
Hustle.
You know what? I did have that deer in a headlight look a moment ago, or the eye choked on an olive look. But the reason why is I think I recognize Mike from television. I think, if I'm not mistaken, you were on HGTV.
I was. I remodel houses also as a hobby, and HGTV decided to record the Groundbreakers show on my landscaping project of one of my houses. And it's sort of one of those mixed blessings. You go, I've watched that show all the time, and you go, what kind of loony bin would have bought a house that required that much effort? And all of a sudden, I'm one of those
You're the
guys.
Loony bin
I'm the loony bin guy.
So you're smart. You're athletic. You remodel houses. Oh, my gosh. I can't handle anymore, Lee. Thank you, listeners, for listening to us today, and we really hope all of you will check out Mike Gomez at his website and also check out the seminar on July 16th from 7:30 to 9 at Georgia Tech. Thank you so much for listening. Until next week, I'm Amy Otto. Any final thoughts, Lee?
Yeah, great show. Thank you so much
Excellent.
For being here.
Yeah, thank you, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day.